are back, everyone. It's another episode of Inside Boxing presented by PPV.com in association with Yahoo Sports and Uncrowned. PPV.com, May 2nd, we'll be streaming David Benavidez versus Zerto Ramirez. Live interactive chat, no subscription. Stream it to any of your devices, watch parties, on a phone, on a plane, anywhere. PPV.com is your home for live boxing. May 2nd. David Benavidez, Zerto Ramirez, quickly approaching. As I look at the date here, it is Thursday, April 16th, less than 2 weeks away from what should be a great cruiserweight bout for David Benavidez. So go follow PPV.com, our proud presenting sponsor. It allows us to do this podcast twice a week. And follow us at Inside Boxing Live. Subscribe to the channel on YouTube. Very rarely ask you to do that, but I'm going to have to start asking a lot more. Like the video. Go over to Chris's Algeria's Instagram, like it, unsubscribe, then subscribe again. How are you, Chris?
I'm good. And also tell your friends. Tell your friends. How about that?
That's old school style.
Old school. Tell your friends. Tell somebody. I'm good, man. I'm good. I can't believe it's Thursday already. We're here and we're talking boxing once again. I feel like Sunday was just yesterday, but that's how these weeks go, these days.
It's flying. We're in the middle of what should be a very crazy stretch of boxing. I'm here in New York City.
I was gonna say, your background's looking pretty cool, pretty sharp over there.
Man. I am in the New Yorker Hotel on 34th and 7th. Outside of my window is Madison Square Garden. I can see.
Love that.
Joe Frazier, Muhammad Ali obviously went down at Madison Square Garden. Muhammad Ali stayed at this hotel.
Mm-hmm.
Joe Kiambo, our friend, sent me a picture of Muhammad Ali laid up in bed in the New Yorker Hotel after the Joe Frazier fight, face all messed up. Quote was, "I'm not going to cry," but he's laying in the New Yorker bed.
They haven't updated the New Yorker since then, by the way. Just
going to say, my friend, this is the smallest hotel room I've ever been in, bro. When I walked in, I went, is there like another room? Is this door go to like a hallway? Nope. It's about, I would say like 10 by 10. It's almost like a jail cell, but it's really nice. I got the window with the breeze. I got the TV with the Yankee game on. I got Madison Square Garden right there.
Best location you can have if you have a fight at the Garden. But man, I've stayed in there for a few of my Garden fights, and it's rough. That's rough spending time in there.
It's a little haunted too.
It's dark. Like I heard some noises. Yeah, it's dark. It's haunted. It's a little scary. Yeah, the rooms they used to put me in were really big, though. I will say that.
Yeah, you probably got the suite, right?
Yeah. I had huge rooms.
Love that. I'm here for Most Valuable Promotions. Their kickoff on ESPN on Friday night. Alicia Baumgartner stepping in the ring against Bo Mi Ri Shin, Korean fighter.
Nice.
Who fought Caroline Dubois, who's a really
she's tough.
Action fighter.
Yeah.
And then we have Shadasia Green, unified champion at 168 pounds, fighting Lonnie Daniels, who recently fought Clarissa Shields, took Shields the distance. So it's like funny because Baumgartner, everyone's asking Baumgartner about Caroline Dubois, and Baumgartner's talking about Amanda Serrano and Katie Taylor this whole week. And then you have Shadasia Green, where every question for Shadasia Green is about Clarissa Shields. So it's like one of these trap types of fights for them where they cannot overlook their opponents. I expect both of them to win. They're sizable favorites.
Yeah.
Baumgartner is like a minus 1200 favorite, which I think is a little too wide. But man, she is she's out there in full effect, Alicia Baumgartner. She's embracing being the heel.
Mm-hmm.
She wants to go into WWE. She's talking about. She told me she's doing some like game show in Malaysia. Like she's the next 3 to 5 years. I feel like she's going to be doing just about everything, pissing people off along the way, which she seems pretty fine in doing as well.
Well, I think that's brilliant on her part because you know, how long is she really going to be able to be at the top of the sport? And if you're already talking about other stuff you want to do, you probably don't have that much interest to be in there. She's going to try and make as much money as she can and then move on to the next and keep making money. I mean, I saw her, the collaboration with Ronda Rousey. Ronda did something very similar where she was able to go to WWE. She's been in movies. She's really been able to diversify her portfolio, so to speak. And I think it's a smart move for someone like her to do that as well.
Yeah, there's a little bit of like a blueprint being that was laid down by Gina Carano and Ronda Rousey, who I had the honor of being in their presence yesterday at this press conference. We had the boxing press conference, and then we had the MMA press conference for the Netflix card on May 16th. So I got to interview Nate Diaz, Mike Perry, Francis Ngannou. Man, that was awesome. the Nate Diaz one, I was just telling you before we started, we went live. Like, obviously, I've interviewed some bigger names in boxing. Haven't really dabbled into the MMA world in a while, but Nate Diaz is like, you see him like slapping media members, making them look like fools. I'm like, is this going to be my time? If he doesn't like my questions, is he going to just be like, fuck this?
He did put hands on you. It looked like he was going to snap your arm like a chicken wing. Like, he went right to wrist control, grabbed your elbow. I was like, oh, there it goes.
You know why? Because I called him a podcaster.
I know.
He hates podcasters. Because he started asking me questions about one of the bits we were doing. And I was like, see, man, you're a podcaster. And he's like, no. Grabbed me. I was ready to. I had it cocked. I had the left hand cocked. I was ready to go.
That's the thing. When you're a fighter, you don't ever want to be media. You don't want to be what I have become. So like that transition when you're first, because he's still fighting. So like obviously he's not
40.
That, but down the way, you know, that might be something that he goes on to. Probably not, but he might end up being a podcaster. Look at Jake Shields. Jake Shields is a super popular podcast that makes him money. You know, so you do have to kind of like you live long enough to become your enemy kind of thing.
Nate Diaz could do whatever he wants, bro. I didn't realize. I knew he's how big of a star he is. Like, he could do whatever he wants. Once he leaves fighting, whenever he decides to leave, because he's 40 years old and he's still commanding $10 million paychecks, supposedly, for this Netflix MMA card, do whatever he wants. Like, there are companies that would shell out major dough for him to do podcast or do some type of media. I don't see that for him. He doesn't really enjoy it. But he was in very good mood and in good spirits for our media session. And I'll tell you this, at the press conference yesterday, I got the pass so I can run around, go backstage, and you know me, bro. I'll go into every room and I'll try to get the coolest area. So they do the press conference and it ends, and Nate immediately beelines it to his dressing room. So I follow the whole crew. Lights up the biggest blunt I've ever seen in my life.
I wonder who's in a good mood.
Big, loose fucking blunt. And it smells something like it's like another strand of weed that I didn't even know existed.
The kids these days tell me it's very strong. So,
but imagine, like there's strong weed out there you can buy at a dispensary. Then there's Nate Diaz's stash.
He lights up
the blunt, and I'm like, yo, this is like watching like Willie Nelson, Snoop Dogg, Cheech and Chong. Like, he's in that stratosphere of potheads. And it's like, holy shit, it's like watching Rembrandt paint. Watching Nate Diaz light up a blunt. And then he passes it to Ronda Rousey, and she hits it.
Oh, wow.
And I'm like, I don't care that I'm not rolling. I don't care that I didn't capture this on my phone. I saw it with my own eyes.
This ain't boxing, man.
That's what I'm saying.
This ain't boxing. Wow.
That's what I'm saying. I had all the MVP social kids with me and all the MVP guys that worked the event. And I'm like, I'm so used to boxing. I'm like, this is such a different world for me to interview Nate and Mike Perry, who I have so much respect for, who has just like reinvented his life and reinvented his fighting career time and time again. Now he's fighting Nate Diaz in what I consider the real BMF. Title bout on May 16th, and Ngannou sat down with him, which was like,
oh, he's awesome, such a dude.
The aura, like, whenever you talk about aura, like, in a way had his own little aura when I met him. Obviously Canelo, when he walks in a room, he like commands it. When Ngannou entered the room, you're like, holy shit, that's like one of the baddest men in the world.
I've met some really top flight professional fighters in my years of being a pro kickboxer and being in MMA gyms and boxing, obviously. Francis Ngannou, meeting him, he is like jarring how big and imposing he is as a human being. Shaking his hand is gigantic. He's just a giant, giant man. He's a huge boxing fan,
yep. Yeah,
which we've learned that when he comes and actually fought Tyson Fury to a really close split decision. Huge boxing fan. So when I first met him, like, all he was doing was asking me about boxing. This was probably 7-8 years ago. But I was like, holy cow. Like, each ab was the size of my face. Like, the guy is so big. And he's like ridiculously giant, ripped guy. But also just the nicest, coolest, down-to-earth dude. Just like genuinely giddy talking about boxing. Like,
yeah.
Loves boxing.
Like, when we wrapped on the interview, he still wanted to talk, yeah, asking me questions and stuff. And I had to get his thoughts on AJ and Fury because he fought both of them.
Right.
And the fact that AJ kind of like vaporized him, like, that's some alpha male shit.
Yeah, well, to this day, man, I think AJ still has the single best punch in the heavyweight division. I mean, that right hand is nuclear. He can crack you with that thing and put you away. And he's got the delivery system, unlike Wilder, who, you know, he's not as accurate as he used to be. AJ still is. And when he believes in it, forget it, man. He's taking your head off, just like he did for Francis.
Yeah, like he wouldn't give me like a direct answer on who he thinks is going to win versus Fury and AJ. He kept talking about all of Fury's attributes, like he's slick. He kept saying slickery. I was about to say that's not a word. As someone that makes up words all the time,
right? Like, yeah, you be.
I was like, Sergano, that's not
Richard, you.
Slickery. I was like, he's like Fury's very slickery, and he can keep you at distance.
Well, it's like strategery. Strategery is not a word, George, but it's very, very good word to use, and slickery.
He kept talking about Fury, which leads him to believe he thinks Fury will win. I couldn't get the exact answer. I don't know. He's being very diplomatic.
I've been able to talk to some people, and I spoke to Robert Garcia and Stephen Bradman Edwards the other day. We were all split on it. Robert thinks Joshua is gonna win. Brad was leaning towards Tyson, and these are all leans because we're still far away from it. Yeah. I was leaning towards Tyson, but then I talked to Lance Pugmire, and then I saw the point that Usyk is now hanging out with Joshua, and like from a psychological place, I don't care if they're swinging kettlebells, I don't care if they're doing boxing. Right. That doesn't like matter to me. But psychologically, that means a lot to me. I'm like, oh my God, now I'm starting to lean AJ a little bit. I don't know. I'm truly 50-50 on the fight. But it's just interesting to talk to people because, listen, Dan, people are excited about this fight. I don't care. I don't care that it's happening 7 years too late.
Oh, definitely. There's a major buzz for it. And I just hope it happens because we're getting into that territory where we're discussing it at length. And is Joshua going to take a tune-up? Is he going
to last I heard, Eddie said he was, so...
Tune-up, right? Yeah, like a August type of
But also, he put out that Wilder could be the tune-up. That ain't no tune-up, dude. No, that's not a bad idea.
I think Riyadh is putting up the money for this fight, and they said no. They said no. From what Hearn told IFL TV was they said no to Wilder, too risky. They're probably learning a little bit now. Riyadh said no.
Okay, so they're
This is according to Eddie, an IFL TV interview. They said too risky. So maybe they are starting to learn, like not to get burned by, you know, if they had their way, I think they'd go right into Fury versus Joshua. Obviously,
totally.
that's what Turkey wanted when he set up that whole bungled announcement in the ring after the fight. 5 million viewers in the UK for Fury versus Makhmudov. Talking to some people here and the Netflix people that are at this event here in New York City. Very good number, they say, because it's not the same. It's not the it's a smaller country. Less people have Netflix in the UK. So 5 million is like equivalent to like a 20 million here. So that they're okay. Very happy with the number.
So per capita, it was still a good number for them.
Yes. I hope we do get Fury.
I mean, but what does that mean at the end of the day? Did it cost more? Was it more expensive over there?
Then which fight? Like what? The
like is it like? Yeah, I mean,
I just think it's a smaller country, so not as many people have it. Yeah. You know, it's a smaller country, but they love boxing 20, 30 times more than they do here.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a much bigger deal, but I don't know, man. It's like, all right. Well,
was the Netflix person that's here going to tell me no? We're unhappy. No.
Well, no. Listen, it's a good thing because the worst thing could happen is that they have a bad performance and Netflix is like, all right, boxing doesn't work. You know, these numbers are diminishing. Let's move on. I don't think that's the case.
They're very happy. Let's start off with a fight that is not getting nearly enough chatter. There's not enough Inoue Nakatani chatter on the timeline. We're less than 2 weeks away from what is the biggest fight in Japanese history. 55,000 they're expecting at the Tokyo Dome, a complete sellout. Close to a $30 million gate, which is insane. There's only been two other fights at the Tokyo Dome in the history of its existence, Tyson Douglas and Inoue versus Neary. Now we can add Inoue versus Nakatani. Not getting a lot of buzz here in the U.S. Like, there's not anything on it. Like, I just found out last week that it's going to be on DAZN officially. Like, didn't even have a broadcast home here in the States. Doesn't mean it's not going to be a banger of a fight. Obviously, with Nakatani's last performance, kind of put a little bit of a damper on it. But this is going to be amazing. This is Inoue's toughest fight. It's the biggest fight in Japanese history. I am all for it. 8 a.m., May 2nd. Let's go.
Yeah, I'm super jacked up about this fight. I'm not sure why it's not getting the coverage that it deserves. And for them, they don't care. Obviously, they sold.
Let's get over there. It is.
Yeah, they sold 55,000. They don't care. They sold out a month ago. The tickets were gone a month ago. That's crazy. So, you know, speaking about like, you know, UK is a smaller country, so that, you know, them selling out or they're getting 5 million views is, listen, in Japan getting 55,000, that's that, per capita, that's even crazier. So, and especially because they did it so fast. So talk about a boxing culture that's really dialed in, because this fight is as good as it gets in the lighter weights, man. I mean, the fact that we can't go sucks, so we do have to watch it Saturday morning. But I'm working a fight Friday night for Pro Box, then Saturday morning is Nakatani Inoue, or Inoue Nakatani, and then Saturday night is Zerto and David Benavidez.
It's one of those weekends. It's one just of like those last year's. Remember last May? Last May second weekend. It's not it always has been a big weekend for boxing, going back to Mayweather even before that. Last year was the Canelo Skull, which we don't ever want to talk about again. The Times Square card, and then the Inoue on Sunday.
Yeah. And we used to have one event, you know, on these big weekends, and it was just the biggest event possible on everybody to. Now we're just like, we have so many different products out there because of these different promotions and different networks. I don't know, man. I love where boxing's at right now. It's a little crazy, you know, but it's gives us plenty of gunpowder.
Oh, it's crazy. It's crazy for sure. Daisuke Sugara, our friend, the reporter, I always catch up with him. He interviewed me about my thoughts on Inoue Nakatani. I was picking his brain a little bit. And he was like, I know you guys can't go, because he listens to the pod every week. He's like, I know how badly you want to go, but he's flying to California to cover Ohtani and the Dodgers. And from California, he's going to Japan, because this is like the biggest thing ever there.
That's so awesome. I mean,
this is the biggest fight in the history of Japanese boxing. And that's a country that's rich in boxing history.
And it's so crazy that they're 122 pounders. The biggest fight in the history of their country, and it's two of their own. One obviously trains here in Nakatani. I don't know. This fight's awesome, and I saw an interview from Rudy Hernandez, and it's crazy. He touched on every single thing that I thought was an issue in his last fight against Hernandez. So Nakatani struggled with Hernandez, and I was just like, you know, he didn't move his feet enough. He didn't throw enough of the sets of jabs. He didn't, you know, fight at the right distance. He expected this guy to just go away. And, you know, it really did a really good interview with Boxing Scene, and he was talking about,
I just read that,
all of those things, you know, the footwork, the movement, you know, being able to fight at a distance. I was really impressed with that. Not only the eye to recognize it, but also that we're like, all right, we really got to work on this. And listen, you got a guy like Nakatani, I bet you he's an incredible student. You tell him to do something, he's going to do it. And I really think I know Vegas does not agree with me. I think that fight was better for Nakatani to have to go through those many rounds, go through a tough fight, deal with adversity, and then also realize like, this 122 is different. I can't just hit these guys and they turn to dust. I have to set things up. I got to be more deceptive. And especially with Inoue, you can't just use your jab as a rangefinder to throw power shots. It's not going to work. You're going to get hurt that way. So I think it was an eye-opening experience for Nakatani that, listen, I got to make adjustments to be better for Inoue. And now we're here.
Yeah, the Boxing Scene article written by Lance Pugmire interviewed Rudy Hernandez, trainer of Nakatani, and he was very forthcoming with a lot of information here. I was reading it like, wow, I can't, like, went into some thing to talk about in camp. Nakatani has worked on advancing his movement, boosting his versatility, crisp power, rapid footwork. A few weeks ago, according to this article, others in the gym expressed some concerns to Hernandez that Nakatani was slow to mix in the new changes effectively. Hernandez poo-pooed all that and said, when you're working on something, it takes time. On fight night, that's when we want to see the results, not in the gym. But going back to that fight with Hernandez. He had his last fight with Sebastian Hernandez.
Yeah.
I'm getting the trainer in.
Right. I literally did that yesterday. I was like, it's Hernandez, right? Because I'm looking, I'm not Rudy, it's like Rudy Hernandez.
Yes.
Rudy Hernandez, Sebastian Hernandez, right.
Rudy one's Hernandez opponent, one's is the trainer. Sebastian Hernandez was Nakatani's last opponent. That's why I believe maybe there's a little bit of the luster off of it, a tiny bit here in the States. It's because Nakatani knocked out Hernandez, then there'd be even more. I do also believe that it's just not being promoted here. Someone commented on social media that, you know, Japan, they block everything. Like, so we're not getting any of the video highlights. We're not getting any of the promotion. They are very territorial, and they don't care. Like you said, 55,000 people.
They don't need
that's
to.
That's why is like forced to come fight here. He never wants to come to the States, never wants to do media. He did a TikTok live last week, and he gave away a lot of information I want to get to in a second. But with Nakatani and Sebastian Hernandez, 115, 113, two judges had that. I don't know how one judge had it, 118, 110 for Nakatani. That was just wild, ridiculous. Hernandez landed 247 power shots, a massive surge over the final six rounds where he outlanded Nakatani and now threw Nakatani. First six rounds, Nakatani looked great, and then he hit a wall. And, I wonder what his path to victory is in this fight. He's a 3-1 underdog, according to DraftKings. Inoue's minus 400 favorite, which is interesting because Inoue hasn't been this close of a or small of a favorite since the Fulton fight in 2023, where he was minus 270 in the Fulton fight as a favorite. He's minus 400 against Nakatani. But think about Nakatani and, like, his path to victory here. Like you said, you just said before, like, he can't just, like, throw a lazy jab and expect to get it done there. But what he has going for him is the length, is his reach, is his jab and movement. Is he going to have to try to outbox Inoue, who we've seen over the last couple of fights can beat you many different ways? And definitely he's showing more of his boxing skills Inoue lately.
So it's going to be really hard to outbox Inoue because I know we'd think of him as this knockout guy. He's an excellent, excellent fundamental boxer, and he's got a fantastic jab. That thing is lightning quick. It's powerful. He has different. He's a variety of jabs, and really, his first step is just so quick, and he follows that or leads with his jab. So he masks his footwork, so he gets in close. That's why he's able to get that, those power punches off the way that he does. Nakatani is going to have to keep this fight at a distance, and he's going to have to use a variety of jabs, whether he's blinding in a way, whether he's disrupting his lead hand as well, whether he's setting up his power shots if he does get Inoue to take a backward step. But you've got to be able to control that first step, because if Naoya Inoue explodes across the gap the way that he does, Nakatani's in real trouble. He's going to have to make sure that he uses that extra 3-inch reach that he has. And the way to do that is to have a dominant lead hand position, lead hand and lead foot position. And using that lead hand as a southpaw, as a disruptor, I think is going to be really important for Nakatani, but also to have that fade to be able to pull back and slide back in. But keeping that lead foot on the outside so he doesn't get caught with those right hands down the middle, it's a tall task. But he does have the skill set, and I've been saying this for years, stylistically, I can see how Nakatani wins this fight. And if it were not for that last fight with Sebastian Hernandez that he struggled mightily, these betting lines would be a lot closer. Yeah. A lot closer. It's a shame, but also it's a way to make money. Because if you actually do think Nakatani can pull it off, if he is the guy, you got a wider line.
Yeah, I kind of like what I've seen from Inoue over the last couple of fights. Boxing beautifully. The Cardenas fight, I think, scared him a little bit. Neary dropping him. He's been dropped in two of his last six fights.
Yeah.
He's 33 years old. He's has one more or two more fights at 122, he says, before he goes up to featherweight. He's got a lot of miles on that odometer. And but it's not
he's
because he has a bad...
Yeah. I didn't realize 33 he was 33
years old.
Yeah.
Not that he has a bad chin and not that he has bad defensive lapses in a way. He just wants to go for the knockout and is just so willing to trade that he finds himself in these exchanges and he's getting hit on the chin flush. Nakatani has phenomenal power. That Maloney knockout still comes to mind. And
brutal. One of the most brutal knockouts I've seen in person.
Disgusting. I love the Maloneys. I'm glad they've recovered from that. But he's got a lot of great skills, Nakatani. Like he does everything great. He's got the footwork, speed, power, length, everything. I'm not ready to write off Naoya Inoue. Like if anything, I think he's like figured out a way to master being 33 years old, maybe losing a little bit of his reflexes, outboxing these guys, like shutting these opponents out, like these top 10 guys in weight classes, like outboxing them, but still having like moments where he'll put together a combination, which we just don't even see in boxing anymore, combination punching. Like this doesn't exist in the sport anymore. So to see Inoue, I'm not ready to write Inoue off yet. I do think Inoue is going to win this fight. I do think it will be some moments in there where he's pushed because Nakatani is young and, like I just said, all the great attributes. But this should be a Nakatani, an Inoue decision win.
It should be, yes. And I lean that way as well. This is, that would be the third fight in a row where Naoya Inoue is gone to decision, because he beat David Picasso his last fight, and then MJ Akhmadaliyev the fight before that, both 12 round decisions. He got stung in the MJ fight too in the last round. You know, he didn't go down, but he's been down a couple times. You said, like, yeah, he's been dropped 2 of his last 6, but he's also been hurt a couple times since then too. It's not just, you know, when going down, he does get hit, because like you said, he's so offensive minded. He does want to knock you out so bad. So there's going to be spots for Nakatani. And I found that in a way is susceptible to get hit early. Like we saw him go down against Cardenas and Neary. And late, like we saw in the Picasso fight and the Akhmadaliyev fight. So there's going to be spots for Nakatani. If Nakatani's able to hurt him early, then I think Naoya might actually score the knockout. Because he gets up like an absolute monster. But I think if Nakatani's smart, he lets sleeping dogs lie, doesn't awake the monster right away, and tries to outbox him, befuddle him, make it uncomfortable, take it down the stretch, and then if in a way starts to get frustrated, which he does at times because he really wants to engage, that's where there's going to be openings for him. But ultimately, I agree with you. I think Inoue has a lot left and goes on to win a decision, and maybe not the widest of decisions. Maybe Nakatani actually wins rounds, but I think it's going to be a respectable performance from Nakatani.
So Naoya Inoue went on TikTok Live and said that he has one more fight at 122 after Nakatani, a fight that he's quote-unquote always wanted before going to his final weight class at featherweight. What is this fight that he's always wanted? To me, like, it has to be Bam Rodriguez, right?
I mean, always wanted? What does that mean? When did Bam really get on his radar? Like, I don't know if that's a weird statement.
Maybe I'm misquoting him. But a fight that he's wanted.
Has he?
Gotta be Bam.
Has he? Has he really talked about that?
But what other fight? Like, what other fight is it? Like, he's cleared out the whole division. Here's Nakatani is the prize.
Sam Goodman fight didn't happen.
Come on, it's not it.
That Sam Goodman fight didn't happen.
Yeah, but the Bam rumors have been intensifying. You know, Robert Garcia has been going on the Pro Box show and kind of saying, you know, we'll meet him at 130 one day. Like, no, that's not going to happen. Or, you know, we're always open to fighting Naoya anyway. I know DAZN wants it. To me, I can't read between the lines. I'm going to try to read between the lines here, where I think it is Bam Rodriguez before he goes to featherweight. Like, I mean, who else could it possibly be?
That would be great and huge. I'd be surprised, but listen, I've been surprised quite a bit this year in terms of the fights that are they're being brought up and actually coming to fruition.
In a way, it's crazy. Like he's now at the point of his career. Like he's has no problem taking on these challenges. Like Nakatani, boom, 28 years old. Never has. Never will. Nakatani, 28 years old. Bam Rodriguez, top 5 pound for pound. Bring him on if that's who he's talking about. Featherweight. I mean, we kind of figured he was going to go to featherweight one day, but now he's kind of solidified it. That's a whole nother crop of fighters there that are going to present all sorts of dangers to him.
Really difficult, dangerous fights at 26. I don't know. I don't think Inoue is going to retire undefeated. I really don't. Because of his willingness to tangle with such dangerous opposition and always take the toughest fights possible. And there's no knock on that. He does not need to know. His legacy is cemented. He is all time at this point. But I hope he gets the recognition for being a guy who consistently seeks out the toughest opposition possible, because he's done that already, and he actually continues to do that even at a quote-unquote advanced age of 33, which for that weight class is advanced. So, yeah, I don't know, man. Maybe it's Bam. That's so crazy to say, but like, what else would it be? Because we, like you said, exactly. You talked me into it. I didn't think so. Now, it's got to be Bam.
Yeah, I don't know what else it could possibly be. I hope it is. Like, that would just be awesome. I don't know if Bam's team wants to do that. It would be, you know, he's at going up to now 115, no 118 to fight Antonio Vargas for a belt, which I believe will be going down in June. So it would be one more weight class for Bam. He can do that. I don't think that would be a problem. But
yeah, but it's one more weight class up.
That's what I mean.
From one that he came up to where Inoue is leaving.
Right.
It's a lot.
His team might say, hey, this is our potentially only chance to make 10 times more than we ever will for the rest of our career. Like, Bam, you're an unbelievable talent. And, you know, is anyone going to come along at your weight classes over the next 5 years that will produce the same amount of money that you can make against Inoue in one night? And he could potentially beat Inoue, Bam Rodriguez.
Yeah, he could. It's crazy to say, but yes, he could.
Imagine if he, that's the risk. That's the risk they would take. So the risk is you're going to make a shit ton of money. It's not risk. And you could potentially beat him. I think it would be, I think Inoue would be a very, the slightest of favorites in that fight. What do you think?
I think he'd be more than slight.
2-1?
Honestly.
Two and a half.
2.5, 3-1.
3-1. That's pretty wide.
Dude, I see him being a sizable favorite, and sizable being the opportune word there. That's a lot. It's a lot to ask of a guy. And we always do this to these young guys, or these smaller guys. Oh, what about make them fight? Like, you're talking about Inoue fighting Gervonta a couple years ago. It's like, come on. How many weight classes are you going to push these guys into where they're not going to be the same guy? Like, weight classes matter. We have them for a reason. And it's amazing when guys can go across vast weight classes. But, like, if you just keep pushing them, you're just going to push them into defeat. And they're just not going to be themselves. And then you're going to tarnish their legacy and talk shit. Oh, well, he lost to this guy. Well, you made him go up five weight classes.
The course of time in boxing over the history, there's always been catchweight fights, super fights that never even dreamed possible. Manny Pacquiao, Oscar De La Hoya was literally like a Larry Merchant, like pipe dream one night at a bar. And all of a sudden it happened. So, like, sometimes you have to do that. You have to pull these strings. And that would be a crazy super fight. I think that would get, like...
Inoue doesn't have to do anything. He doesn't have to do anything.
No, he seems like he wants to.
Yeah.
Which is why he should be respected. He, like, enjoys this. He can't get up for the smaller fights. Or, I mean, even he's fighting. Everyone he fights is top 10, either a champion or, like, he has, like, 25 consecutive title fights.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. So, Jose Guzman, a former opponent of mine in the pros.
Oh, he's here, bro. I'm with him all week.
And a good friend of ours, guy.
Just saw him in the lobby.
He's a staple in New York boxing and Puerto Rican boxing. He's in Manny Serrano's camp. Great, great guy. But he was over in Japan.
Yeah, talk to him about it.
Yeah, and he was giving some really good insight about how Naoya Inoue trains. I was really, really surprised to hear that. He doesn't do strength conditioning. It's super old school. He spars and he runs. He spars and he runs. And it's funny. I've heard that so much from the best fighters in the world. Like, they don't do anything all that special. They just spar. Sparring is important. And not even a lot, apparently. And they run a lot. And it's so old school. It's what you think of, like, when you think of, like, Sugar Ray Robinson. It's like, what did he do? He sparred and he ran. And so Sugar... he used to spar, I think, once or twice a week, and he would only do 4 rounds.
Wow.
But he would have 4 sparring partners because he was trying to knock you out every round. And this is a 15-round fighter, Dan. Like, so he's just saving it for fight night, but he's on kill mode for 4 rounds once a week, and then the rest is just conditioning and running.
Wait, so 4 rounds of 4 different sparring partners?
Well, in case he knocked you out. Because it was very likely he was.
So, I would hate to be that, like, second or third guy after the first, like, knockout.
Just, like, crushing these guys. It's interesting to hear when you get a certain level of fighter, like, and I, anyways, on that level where you're like, you're in that goat status, and you're like, what are they doing different? It's like, to look into their camps and to see they're doing it so different than everyone else. It's really interesting.
Yeah, I would talk to Guzman about that. He was telling me pretty much the same thing. Like, in a way, it's just like a very quiet, down to earth superstar. He's everywhere. He's on every billboard, and no wasted movement, he said, in his sparring, and just no wasted movement at all. Apparently, he's just anything.
He's like that the way he walks around the casino. Like, you see the way he moves. He's like, he's just, there's nothing wasted.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome. So yeah, we will be locked in on May 2nd the whole weekend, whether it's Benavidez Zerto on PPV.com or Inoue and
literally Nakatani. locked in a room.
Yeah, that's going to be weekend. No talking to the family or friends or loved ones that weekend. Ryan Garcia and Conor Benn are in far along negotiations for a late summer showdown in Las Vegas that's either going to stream on Netflix or DAZN. Can't say I'm shocked with this, Chris. This is the fight that should be next. If it's not going to be Ryan versus Haney, I am fine with Ryan versus Conor Benn.
It makes far too much sense for so many different reasons. One, WBC champion, WBC number one. Conor Benn is the number one contender.
That doesn't make any sense. But
which makes zero sense. that he got there. He hasn't fought in the weight class in 5 years. Has not made 147 pounds
in theory in
5 years. And then there's that. But also after the performance against Regis Progre, Ben left a lot to be desired in terms of what he can do in a weight class that is now getting tough again. This was a barren weight class for a bit, and it was really upsetting because this is one of the original dream weight classes where everybody tuned in, and it was not. It was very weak. It was barren. And now with the emergence of Brian Norman, the return of Devin Haney, the Ryan Garcia raising from the ashes like a phoenix, you know, you've got Shakur Stevenson dabbling with jumping up there. We've got all these studs now at 47. This is a real weight class. And a Conor Benn who struggles as much as he did to make 149.5, I just don't see him. I don't see a path to getting a title anywhere else. Ryan is, I mean, he's the most dangerous of the group, but he's also the most inconsistent. So there's a possibility you can catch him on an off night, but also it's the biggest money by far of anybody out in that weight class because Ryan is a legitimate star. So yeah, the fight makes far too much sense not to happen.
Yeah, financially, it's a blockbuster.
And next, it has to happen next because
yeah, they're looking at late August. Financially, this is a blockbuster type of fight. It's the type of fight that Turkey gets excited about and is willing to shell out the money. It should be a ring card. Makes sense in Las Vegas in the States. I know Ben has had 3 straight stadium fights in the UK, but this is a Vegas summer fight. It makes all the sense in the world, even though it doesn't make sense, like you said. Like, I agree, Ryan Garcia is probably the most vulnerable of all the champions at 147, but he has the
but also most the most upside. Dangerous. Yeah, he can ice you.
Like, he's got that one hitter quitter. If he fights the way he did against Barrios, I think he should be able to handle Ben pretty easily, if not stop him in the later rounds. Ben will just, you know, get by with toughness and grittiness. But yeah, I mean, I want to see Ryan versus Haney. I have no idea why that fight is not being treated the same way this fight is in terms of the funding with Saudi. Like, why is Turkey not just doing everything he possibly can to make Ryan versus Haney 2, which is there right now? Are they doing the same thing they've been doing where it's like, oh, let's add another, they're not adding another belt. No, that doesn't even make any sense either. Are they just trying to prolong it? Let's get another card out of this where Ryan should win. Let's roll the dice a little bit. Worst case scenario, Conor Benn wins. We have either a rematch or we do Benn versus Haney. But I'm not mad at it, but I just don't understand this sport sometimes when the clear, logical fight is right there waiting for us between Ryan Garcia and Devin Haney. But then another girl comes along and they're like, ooh, I'll take... It's like the meme, like when you're with your girlfriend, you see the other girl
over her shoulder. Yeah.
Like, why do we shift so quickly to now we're far along in a Ben Ryan discussion where a new shiny toy is now being presented in front of us?
Because the landscape changes all the time and opportunities present themselves and you've got risk versus rewards. The Devin Haney-Ryan Garcia fight, I think, is high risk, high reward for both guys. And then I look at the Ben Ryan fight, and for Ryan, it's a much lower risk, and the reward is still very high. Probably not as high, but still very high because Ben is a star in the UK. Ryan's a star everywhere, which is what I think is going to actually, like you said, I think that's going to be able to pull Ben to the States because anyone else, you have to go to the UK to fight Ben because the guy literally does put butts in stadiums and he's shown that he can do that. Over here, he's just not as a well-known entity. And anyone who watched him in his last fight, he's not going to gain a lot of fans. So he's going to get pulled over here because, and also Ryan's a champion. So like Ryan does have that negotiating chip in his pocket there as well. So yeah, the Haney-Ryan fight, the fact that it's not being discussed is a little worrisome. Like this might be a snake-bitten fight.
Oh, I hope not.
I really hope not to. I hate saying that, but it just seems like
the fan. Yeah,
it's like the Floyd Pacquiao. Like it's just like, oh, this fight makes so much sense. We got to make that fight happen, and then it just gets kicked down the road.
At least it happened once. Haney and Ryan when they're both under age of 30. Yeah. But this is why some fans just get so just tired of the sport is because it almost looks like Ryan will take the Ben fight because he knows that the Haney one will be there down the line. So he's taking a little bit of a risk.
If you're saying girls, that's like being like, you know, I'm going to date this girl for a little bit and that girl will be there when I come back. And then you break up and go back to her and she's got a new boyfriend. It's like, damn it.
It's risky. Exactly. It's very risky. And but it's just like the one thing about the sport that the fans can't stand. It's like they know that we're hooked in. You know, we're gonna watch everything, and we'll fight Ben, even though everyone wants to see the Haney rematch. Haney's pretty dug in on the drug testing, and I believe Grind was tested for the Barrios fight, and will agree to do testing for the Haney fight. That's a whole nother thing. That's what Haney says. Like, they're pricing themselves out. Just, I don't know, man. I once again, not upset about Ryan versus Ben. I think that's like a perfect commercial fight. It makes all the sense in the world. Ben will talk it up. One thing, though, about Conor McGregor, he's talking about how he's a draw in the UK. But is he, though? Because the two fights with Eubank had a lot to do with the crowd there, because it was that crazy rivalry. And then it was a Tyson Fury fight. So I don't know how much Ben is revered in the UK. I feel like even less now, because they're smart fans. They watched that performance against Progray and were like, this guy is just bluster.
The going term is like he's domestic level. Like he hasn't won any of those titles either. Like that's a big thing. If you do read the comments, I read the comments now when I do the live shows for Boxing Scene, because I have to. It's literally as I'm watching. And that's all I ever hear about Ben. It's like, yeah, he's even Josh Taylor did an interview. And he was like, yeah, you know, he's like he's not bad. He's just like, but he's not, you know, to call out the guys that he's calling out and the world level, like he's domestic regional level, he said. And
well,
that's
throwing the money too.
Yeah, the money he's making is ridiculous.
Like that's gonna make anyone upset. It's gonna make a fellow.
You don't pick your dad. You know, his dad is one of the best UK fighters who's ever lived. So if you're gonna complain about the money, it's like, well, okay, you're gonna complain that he was born to a historic father.
And any of us would have taken that same deal from Zuffa.
But also, in terms of where he's gotten to where he is, like, no, he's not terrible. He's not bad. He's put himself in a position to be here with his father's name. So you can't knock that aspect of it. And I think a lot of people do, because, you know, fighters are bitter. But a lot of, and fans are bitter. But a lot of the fans, from what I've seen in the comment sections, are all like, they're all on the same page. They're like, this guy's, you know, domestic regional level. It's crazy that, you know, he's calling out all these guys and making the money he is for this world class opportunities. But
dude, nepotism, overpaid, past drug allegations.
Your dad's Nigel Benn.
That's a crazy amount of like three different ways to get hated on, and you're also not as good as you think you are. Cocky, force.
Yes.
So like, he's a perfect heel.
It's Ryan Garcia, it's literally everything people hate about a fighter.
He's hitting every demographic of hate. And Ryan Garcia has got his haters too, and, you know, kind of fell ass backwards into a belt and had his own drug allegations. So, oh man, that should be one heck of a lead up if this fight happens. I just hope it does, because if we're not going to get Haney Ryan, this is a good consolation prize. Keep your eye on that. Shakur Stevenson versus Raymond Murataya. This went down. It's not happening, but it could be happening. I think, was Robert Garcia on your guys' show?
Yeah. So I had asked Robert about Murataya and, you know, where he's at. Because, well, actually, no. I had asked the panel. It was Robert and Breadman, and I had asked them about Shakur saying that he was willing to go back to 135. Because I had asked Brett, what do you think he really belongs? And he was saying he's kind of a tweener, Shakur. That he's not, frame-wise, not as big as like a Devin Haney, where welterweight's really where he's going to end up. He'll take welterweight fights, but that's not really where his body. He's more like a 40, could still make 35, dabble. He can dabble in 35. He's probably, you know, most comfortable at 40, but he's a little small for 40 kind of thing. And then, you know, so that brought me right to Robert. I'm like, well, Robert, if he comes back down to 35, like he's saying, would Murataya take this fight, like, now? And he was like, oh, yeah, absolutely. And he was very, very adamant about, like, yeah, if that were to be the next fight at 35, sure. And then he said, like, but Murataya is not long for 35. He's big. He's going to move up to 40. Fight. So he goes, like, if we end up fighting a 40, that's fine, too. And then Shakur comes back and he's, like, you know, barking at Robert, being like, why would I fight him at 40 if he's got a title at 35? Meanwhile, he didn't watch the whole video, because we live in a world of clips and titles.
Yeah. But I think it looks seem like more of like a respectful interaction between Shakur and Robert Garcia.
Robert's always respectful.
Because, yeah, Robert Garcia said, like, we would fight Shakur at 140 or even 144. Then Shakur said, why would we do it at any other weight besides 135 if Murataya has the IBF belt and I have the ring belt? And then Robert said, if you listen to the full interview, We have one more fight at 135 for Murataya, and then we're locking in at 140. If the one more fight at 135 is you, Shakur, so be it. And Shakur said, perfect. So that would be great. If Shakur is willing to go back down to 135, where he's still the ring champion, he doesn't have that WBC belt anymore, obviously, because they vacated it or whatever, the stripped situation. So he's got, and Murataya has the 135, and I throw away the belts, and if you just said who are the two best at 135 right now, Shakur and Murataya are on there, especially with Tank out of the picture and a lot of the other guys vacating belts there. And it would be for the ring belt. That's it. Well, I mean, because we're trying to figure out what Shakur's going to do next. And like you said, he is a tweener. Like, he could fight the guys at 140, but they're not, like, the biggest names. The best challenge, I think, is Murataya at 135. So
he beat the biggest name at 40 already. So it's kind of – he kind of laid waste to 140 by dominating Tio the way he did. I think there is unfinished business at 35. I think the Murataya fight makes a ton of sense. And they are the legitimate number one and number two at 135. I don't care. Yeah. Davis is he can't be in the rankings right now. He's been out of the ring for so long, and 47. I think it's too much right now. I think 35 is where Shakur should go, and then after that, if he wants to stay there, if he doesn't want to, I think he'll have options. The landscape will change. 140.
Shakur wants to solidify himself.
140 will come back.
Yeah, if Shakur wants to solidify himself as pound for pound, which he doesn't really have to, because I think he is.
Yeah.
Like, going to 140 and beating Teofimo, then going back down to 135 and beating the best opponent there, and then going back to one, like, that's, to me, what, like, the pound for pound kind of should be. You know, showing your skills across different weight classes, or at least one of the criteria. But I would like that fight a lot. Murataya Shakur would be fucking awesome. This weekend was supposed to be David Burrell versus Callum Smith. That got postponed.
I was excited for that fight. That's a good fight. That's a sneaky good fight.
Yeah, I mean, Smith hasn't fought since the Bawazi fight last February. Not even, wow, like, February 2025.
Yeah.
David Burrell is on, you know, the Benavidez fight and the Katiev fight. I think Smith had an injury, and they're trying to, still going on with the card. Ben Whitaker is fighting this weekend, headlining the card, and, you know, Morrell was like, I'll fight Ben Whitaker, I'll just step in and fight him, which I thought was amazing, because
what you should do.
Whitaker, like, we don't know what the heck, like, is he a prospect, is he a title contender, is he a star, is he not a star, like, what is this guy?
Did you see the response by Whitaker? I thought it was very respectful and smart. And
I think Whitaker said, what's right, Eddie was like, and Frank Smith were like, no, like, we have plans to have him in stadiums, like, we're not going to do that.
No, they're,
we have time, we have, he's 28. Olympian.
Yeah, but they're still running out of British stars. They lost Conor Benn. Anthony Joshua is older. Yeah. You know, it's not that deep. You cannot.
They invested a lot of money in him too.
You can't risk Ben Whitaker right now. He said, Eddie said five fights. Five fights is a long time at this level. 5 10-round fights. That's a long time
until they consider him top.
Until he's ready for the top. He said
that's insane.
Yeah, it's a long time.
Five fights. He fights twice. I mean, how many times is he going to... If he does three or four in 1 year...
We're still 2 years away. Five fights is 2 years.
April. It has to be 2 years.
So he'll be 30 years old when he's ready for the top contention. So, you know, he's 28. He had an extensive amateur career, obviously. He had started fast in terms of, you know, the step-up fights, but he's not David Morrell fast. David Morrell was fighting for world titles in his 10th pro fight, you know? So they're different kinds of guys. But Dave Morrell is a dog, dude. He, like, that's so funny of him, and not a surprise to him to be like, "Well, fight me then. I'll fight you. I'll step in.
It sucks, man. He just went through a whole training camp. I mean, you can attest to this. Went through a whole training camp. You got to usually just come out of your own pocket for that.
Yep.
Fight doesn't happen. You don't get any money for it. Now you have to wait again, go through a whole nother training camp if they postpone it and they fight in the summer or the fall. But light heavyweight division has come to a halt. I mean, Benavidez is in cruiserweight. He's probably the best light heavyweight today. Not named Better BF or Bivol. What are they doing? Like, Bivol is not fighting on the Pyramid Gaza card, Usyk and Verhoeven. Better BF doesn't have anything lined up, 41 years old. Like, light heavyweight, which was, like, fun for a while, it's nothing now. Dormant.
And there's no lack of good fighters either.
It's weird.
They're not fighting. I'm looking at David Morrell. David Morrell hasn't fought since July of last year. You know, he's going to be out of the ring a year by the time he gets in the ring. Who knows how long this Callum Smith injury
Well, actually, it's probably not the worst thing for Moreau.
I know. He did have two back-to-back really tough fights. David Benavidez and that Khatyev monster who dropped him. That was a rough fight. But at least he got a camp under his belt, you know, for this fight. But yeah, we need these guys to get going. And no, it's actually looking pretty good in the rear view. That Hot Rod win.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people were looking at that Hot Rod fight, and they're like, "This is that guy that everybody's talking about." You know, it's his first time going to 75.
Yeah, and Zuffa.
Yeah, and then he goes out and knocks out Vuzdik. So it's that win has aged well for Morel. Morel has only fought tough guys, only fought good fighters.
Yeah, So the light heavyweight division isn't exactly moving, but Hot Rod is supposed to be fighting for the light heavyweight Zuffa belt.
Is he? Who's he supposed to fight?
I think he's gonna fight that guy that had that crazy uppercut. His name is.
Oh yeah. I don't remember his name.
It's kind of funny that's considered like a title fight for Zuffa.
Yeah, a guy that no one's ever heard of, and then Hot Rod.
They're just giving away the Chris Billums Smith sign to Zuffa, which is clearly going to be Opetai's next opponent. All right, Chris, that is it for this episode. We got some fights this weekend over at Madison Square Garden. Some women's boxing. We got Ben Whitaker over in the UK, which should be a good one as well, before we get closer and closer to May 2nd in Inoue Nakatani, Benavidez, Zerto, Pro Box, the great big boxing weekend of 2026.
Right around the corner, man. Time is flying. We talked about how fast this week has gone, but really this year is going by quick. But the good thing is we're getting tons of fights. Boxing is in a very, very healthy spot. We are flush with fights and a lot more good ones coming up.
Everyone, protect yourselves at all times. Keep your hands up at all times. Stay out of those DMs. We're out.